This is the fourth day of this July 2011 7-day session. We'll resume reading from the teachings of the 11th century Chan master Yuan Wu. And this is from the book Zen Letters, Teachings of Yuan Wu, translated by J.C. Cleary and Thomas Cleary. Here begins another one of his letters. For the sake of this great teaching, the ancients gave up their bodies and their lives and endured endless, immeasurable hardship and toil until they thoroughly clarified its profound, essential message. They treasured it like a precious jewel and guarded it like their eyes. They worked on it assiduously and never let it be taken lightly or defiled. This is one of the reasons we chant the ancestral line in either its abbreviated form or the full version, is to pay tribute, express gratitude toward these great vessels of the Dharma that kept this teaching alive and enabled us to now practice it, to pay tribute to their tremendous exertions, of which most of us have only the faintest understanding. Goes on, as soon as the slightest trace of special understanding arises, it is like clouds casting a pall over a clear sky, like dust obscuring the surface of a mirror. This is very much in the spirit of Zen to disregard any notion of having attained some kind of special understanding. If your understanding is worth anything, you realize there's nothing special about it. You realize that it's nothing that every other person doesn't have, potentially at least. When the great Lin Chi was asked about his special understanding, what it was, he said, "When hungry I eat, when tired I sleep. Fools may laugh at me, but the wise understand." Continues, among the enlightened, being able to speak the truth has nothing to do with the tongue, and being able to talk about the Dharma is not a matter of words. Monk asked Zhao Zhou, Joshu, what teaching is there in the distant mountains where no one is? And Zhao Zhou said, large rocks are large, small rocks are small. Each thing is what it is. Each one of us is what we are. What's the special understanding there? There's a verse in the Mumon Khan where Zen Master Mumon says, "The sky clears and the sun appears. Rain falls and the earth gets wet." Clearly, we know that the words spoken by the ancients were not meant to be passively depended on. Anything the ancients said was intended only so that people would directly experience the fundamental reality. Thus, the teachings of the sutras are like a finger pointing to the moon, and the sayings of the Zen masters are like a piece of tile used to knock on a door. Here's Yuan Wu in the 11th century referring to the ancients. It's a long, long heritage we have inherited. He goes on, "If you know this, then rest. If your practice is continuous and meticulous, and your application broad and all-pervading, and you do not deviate from this over the years, then you will mature in your ability to handle the teachings, to gather up and to release, and you will be able to see through petty things and cut them off without leaving a trace." See through petty things. Boy, our concerns during Sesshin are revealed to be so petty. Yet we can get snarled up in them, these petty concerns, these little friction with other people during the work period or at other times, little slights, petty concerns about this and that, who and what. I think of that saying, don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. Through Sesshin, we get a whole new perspective on things that disturb us. And they come to be seen as, yes, as petty. They recede, these annoyances, these troubles. They recede as Sesshin goes on. They become quieter, become more distant. And that's seeing them as they are. Then, when you come to the juncture of death and birth, where all the lines intersect, you won't get mixed up. You will be clear and immovable, and you will be set free as you leave this life behind. This is deathbed Zen for the last day of your life. Where all the lines intersect. It's another letter. In visiting enlightened teachers and questioning them, you must see real nature and awaken to truth. As you directly forget feelings and put an end to views, you are inwardly washed clean. You become like a simpleton, not calculating gain and loss, not contending for superiority. Favorable or adverse, you cut everything off and don't let it continue. After a long time at this, you naturally arrive at the stage where there are no contrived activities and no concerns. This phrase, as you directly forget feelings and put an end to views, sometimes some people are a little confused about where feelings fit into Zen practice and what to do about them. Well, we don't want to do anything about them. We don't want to suppress them. That would be foolish. As human beings, we naturally feel things, not just physical things, but we have emotional feelings. So we don't want to have any quarrel with feelings arising in the mind, but nor do we want to cling to them. It's really the same approach with feelings as it is with thoughts. We don't suppress thoughts, and we don't cling to them. And whether it's feelings or thoughts or views here, they present themselves, they arise in the mind, in the body, let's say, even, and they have a certain existence. They last a shorter or longer period of time. And then if we don't try to suppress them or cling to them, they just move on out. This, from a Zen perspective, is a healthy way to regard feelings and thoughts. Just transitory events. With anger, for example, even in sesshin, people can sometimes get angry about something or other, and not to compound the thing by getting disgusted with ourselves for being angry. It's just a feeling. It rises, and if we neither try to keep it out, or if we neither also don't try to nurse it with our thoughts, and that's a sure way to have the anger continue, is to be thinking about the object of our anger. If we don't get involved with it, then it's just like a little storm. It kicks up and moves on through. We give these things, whether it's feelings, emotions, thoughts, we give them too much power when we get involved with them. As soon as you have the slightest wish to be unconcerned, a concern has already arisen. Once one wave goes into motion, myriad waves follow. When will it ever stop? When death comes upon you in that condition, you will be frantic and confused simply because you are not free and clear. Go back to a sentence here. He says, you become like a simpleton, not calculating gain and loss, not contending for superiority. These two phrases, not calculating gain and loss, it covers a lot of ground. There are lots of ways in which we can find ourselves calculating gain and loss in one way or another, and also contending for superiority, comparing ourselves to others, vying for a sense of superiority, avoiding a sense of inferiority. To become like a simpleton in practice is considered very advanced in Zen. It doesn't mean going through your daily life and your work, whatever your job is, as a simpleton. It means experiencing the purity of mind, the simplicity in Zazen of a simpleton, or sometimes we say a fool. He goes on, just make this work sure and true, and naturally, even in a noisy marketplace, it will be silent and still as water. Why worry, then, that you will not accomplish your task? Yeah, this is another little demon that arises in Sesshin, is people worrying about accomplishing, getting Kensho, getting through their koan. It's a terrible hindrance in practice. We have to get past such concerns and just reach pure absorption in the practice. Here's another letter. The wondrous path of the enlightened ones is straight and direct. They just pointed directly to the human mind, so we would work to see its true nature and achieve enlightenment. Here Yuan Wu is being very direct himself and reminding us that the enlightened ones just pointed directly to the human mind, so we would work to see its true nature and achieve enlightenment. The mind source is originally empty and peaceful, clear and wondrous, and free from the slightest obstruction. But we screen it off with false thoughts and give rise to defilements and blockages in this unobstructed one. We turn our backs on the fundamental and pursue the trivial, and foolishly revolve in the cycle of routine. We turn our backs on the fundamental. This is turning our backs on mu, or the breath, whatever our practice is. And pursuing the trivial is chasing around with our thoughts. We are so stubbornly habituated to doing this over and over and over again. We leave the true that is our practice, this realm of no mind, and instead inhabit this realm of thoughts. And foolishly revolve in the cycle of routine. Once when I was in Santa Fe, I saw a wall with the following graffiti painted on it. It said, work, buy, consume, die. or that bumper sticker I used to see. Whoever has the most things when he dies wins. I think often when we're younger, we see that which is futile and senseless about this conventional routine of going through life mindlessly. But then as we get older, we get so enmeshed in it, and we largely lose our options because we get all leveraged in debts and other commitments, and we can sometimes just lose perspective completely. And we just go on plodding, never having enough time, not finding the time to sit because we have so much to do all the time. No time. How can we take time to sit when we have so many things to do? And on it goes, year after year, decade after decade. He goes on, if you have great capacity, you won't seek outside anymore. Right where you stand, you will come forth in independent realization. When the transitory blinders of false perception have been dissolved, the original correct perception is complete and wondrous. This is called the identity of mind and Buddha. From this, once realized, it is realized forever. It is like the bottom falling out of a bucket. You open through and merge with the way, and there is nothing occupying your mind. Beholding the essence, pure and still, you receive the use of it and have no more doubts. Then when one is comprehended, all are comprehended. There's a nice little simile for this somewhere, maybe in this book. It's like a skein of thread. You cut through one, you cut through them all. Why is it that when one is comprehended, when the one, Mu, our self-nature, when it is comprehended, all are comprehended, because all are this one. Each thing in its particularity is the whole. Chinese master was asked, what is Buddha? What is the highest reality? He said, 3 pounds of flax. Why not? An ounce of kapok. another letter. The Tao is originally without words, but we use words to reveal the Tao. People who truly embody the Tao penetrate it in the mind and clarify it at its very basis. They strip off thousands and thousands of layers of sweaty shirts sticking to their skin and open through to awaken to the real, true, immutable essence, which is just as it is, originally real and pure and luminous and wondrous, wholly empty and utterly silent. When you reach the point where not a single thought is born, and before and after are cut off, you walk upon the scenery of the fundamental ground. All the wrong perceptions and wrong views of self and other, and is not, that make up the defiled mind of birth and death are no longer there. You are completely cleansed and purified, and you have complete certainty. Then you are no different from all the other enlightened people since time immemorial. In sum, it depends on the fundamental basis being illuminated and the six sense faculties being pure and still. Knowledge and truth merge and mind and objects join. There is no profundity to be considered deep and no marvel to be considered wondrous. When it comes to practical application, you naturally know how to harmonize with everything. This is one of the great benefits or outcomes of long practice, is to be able to harmonize with things in very disparate circumstances, different kinds of people, and one comes to not set oneself against others or against situations, but finds a way to flow with them. This is why the term unsui is so held in such esteem. Unsui means clouds and water. They have this fluid quality, this accommodating nature, clouds and water. There's no self in it, in them, standing against, resisting, opposing. Of course, there is a place to stand one's ground, to insist on something, or to oppose something one knows is not in harmony with the way, and in that case one is still, you could say, harmonizing with the way. In Zen, Roshi Kappel used to say, the ideal, sort of the model of a seasoned practitioner is someone who's strong on the inside and pliable and adaptable, flexible on the outside. Well, that's misleading to talk about an inside and an outside, really. I mean, that is the ultimate strength, isn't it? Is adapting, to be able to flow with, to accommodate as called for. We all probably know people who are armored in their personality, who are hard and contentious, belligerent on the outside, stubborn, unwilling to yield to anyone who doesn't agree with them. And often this conceals someone who is really very insecure. In Zen, it's just the opposite. Another letter. To follow the path, you should step back and practice with your whole being. Make birth and death your only thought. The worldly truth is impermanent. This body is not everlasting. Once you stop breathing, then it's already another lifetime. In another birth, you may sink into non-human species. And then you might go on for thousands of lifetimes through countless ages without emerging. I once asked Roshi Kaplow, how do you understand this idea that sort of out in people who have heard of rebirth, reincarnation, and their only understanding is, oh, that means that your grandmother can be born, or the cow in your backyard could have been your grandmother or something like that. I asked how likely is it that we would go to and be reborn as in a non-human species? And he said, well, you know, I don't know. My understanding from what I've heard is that it's very rare. That is, that you would have to really have done some terrible things in your life to go from a human existence to an animal existence. Well, how would anyone know about any of that? Of course, these realms of existence, we don't need to take them in a literal sense. When he says here, when Yuan Wu says you may sink into non-human species, may mean born as a man or a woman with the kind of just reactive appetites of an animal, for example. The point, of course, Yuan Wu's point is that now, when we not only have these human bodies, but we have encountered the Dharma and more, that we are able to practice in this intense way in Sesshin, supported by so many others, right now, this week, now is the time to make the most of this opportunity, because we don't know how long we'll have this opportunity, how long it might be before it comes around again. Make birth and death your only thought. It's so difficult for us human beings. It's so difficult for us to really maintain awareness of the certainty of death and the uncertainty of the time of death. If we could just maintain that awareness, it would be enough to put everything in a new perspective. Talk about petty things, trivial things, would be seen as just that. But we can acquire something of this perspective in, of course, in our zazen, in seshin. What could be more important than seeing from a fresh and more kind of cosmic perspective? That's what Seshin offers. We acquire a detachment, a healthy detachment from the little busy things that occupy our minds all the time, and then with that detachment, we see differently. And we can reorder our priorities. This would be a wonderful outcome of Seshin. And he goes on, luckily, at present you still have plenty of time. Now is the time to apply effort to turn toward the path every moment, without your mind wavering or your attention faltering. Catch sight of it right where you are. When you reach the point where not a single thought is born, and before and after are cut off, you will suddenly penetrate through to freedom. It's like the bottom falling out of a bucket. Then you experience joy. When he says, it refers to applying effort to turn toward the path every moment without your mind wavering or your attention faltering. This really means, turning toward the path means turning toward the present and not dwelling in thoughts of the future, thoughts of the past, fantasies, but continually noticing when the mind is drifted into thought and then shake it off. Come back to this realm of no mind, which is pure presence. You investigate into the ultimate depths until you walk in the scenery of the fundamental ground and clearly see the original face. Then you will have no more doubts about what the Zen masters have said. You will be able to cut everything off and hold everything still, nurturing it by having no conditioned mind and no contrived effort and no particular concerns. Then 24 hours a day, there will be no more wasted effort. Your mind does not touch upon things and your steps are beyond location. Here's another letter. He's getting warmed up here. Since ancient times, we have only esteemed forgetting thoughts and feelings and finding independent realization. Once getting this realization, we do not set up the idea of self, and we do not congratulate ourselves or put on lofty airs. We just go along freely according to the natural flow, like know-nothings, like simpletons. Only this can be called the practice of a non-striving, unconcerned person of the path. When I was in Japan, I would sometimes, in the Zendo, hear the Roshi say, you must become a mu simpleton, or a mu idiot. It's really talking about a state of no thought, a samadhi, state of utter absorption in mu, completely forgetting oneself, a mind pure, silent, wide awake, wide open, This is a place of not knowing. When the mind is free of thoughts, it is in a state of not knowing. And out of that not knowing, everything happens. Socrates said, wisdom begins in wonder. You could say that what all Zen practices have in common, breath practices, koan practices, they are all ways of conveying us to this darkness of not knowing. Because that is the womb of realization. We can't cling to our thoughts, our so-called knowledge, and be in a state of wonder at the same time. They're impossible. They're mutually exclusive. It's a matter of arriving at this realm of wonder, of questioning, of openness, of darkness. Very few people have the fortitude to stay with this darkness. It's uncomfortable. It can be uncomfortable. Not knowing where one is going. It's a feeling somewhat of being lost, of groping, of floundering even. But in a safe environment like Sesshin, where things are so regulated and disciplined and safe, and with a teacher one can consult with, this gives us the freedom to advance, to move on into this darkness and through more deeply into it. This darkness that is pure mu, pure breath. Okay, our time is up. We'll stop and recite the four vows.